Blog Talk Radio.
Live on Blog Talk Radio. The Candid Frank Live Show.
Candid Frank Live.
With
about half of y'all motherfuckers on the hill.
John the Argo Boat Logo Granger.
Candid Frank Live.
Christopher Lion's Den Jones. Mike. The CFL is the best football in the world, Townsend. Kelly, Rough Rider Daddy Bale. Manasseh, Blog Talk Radio Show, Geber Medine. And Bruce, Hamilton Tiger Cat, 13th man, John Inch. Enjoy ourselves following CFL.ca. Okay, Steve, you got to give me your number, buddy. Okay? So listen. CFL.ca. I have a couple of questions. Let me read this to you. Okay. The CFL.ca's top, and let me emphasize this, top 10 free agent signings. Number 10, Chris Milo, kicker, re-signed with Saskatchewan. Number 9, Jovan Johnson, cornerback, signed by Ottawa. Number 8, Gary Koch or Koch, make up your mind. Wide receiver signed with Hamilton. Number 7. Patrick Watkins. I said Patrick Watkins. Defensive back signed with the Edmonton Eskimos. They're becoming the Edmonton Eskimos, aren't they? Don't you think? Number 6, Craig Butler. Ken Austin has already said he plans on using Butler at safety. It's always good to play safe football. Meaning he'll return to the position that he started as a youngster, when he was a mere 22 years old. Number 5, Nick Moore, or less receiver, signed with Winnipeg. And I think they're trying to underline the first three letters of their name. They weren't Winnipeg last year, but they might be Winnipeg this year. You're going to give it their best shot. They truly are. I think it's really important that we all understand that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have taken this moment to ensure that their team will be in the hunt for the playoffs. And if you listen to Manasseh, it's going to happen. Now, number 4, signed by the Toronto Argonauts from the Montreal Alouettes, Shay Emery. Yeah, linebacker. And number 3, signed by the Hamilton Tiger Cats, Zach Collaros. And number 2, Josh Bork, offensive lineman, re-signed with Montreal. And finally, the top free agent signing of 2014. I'm excited about this. Can you tell? 2014. Hank Burris, quarterback, taking the job that belonged to Kevin Glenn. Forcing Kevin Glenn now to be considering resting for the rest of the season. Now, he could either do it on the sidelines and get paid, or he can rest elsewhere and not get paid. But I think what he's hoping for is to be traded. So, let's... Oh, who else messaged me? Because I'm also wasting time here, guys, because I'm phoning people. Because it's important to note that if you're going to have people on the program, you're going to have to phone them. Because some of the guys we have on the air here, I'm not sure they could negotiate a phone dial. They don't even know what a phone dial is. I don't think any of these guys are too young to even know what a phone dial is. Right, Steve? Let me see what Steve says. Okay, he gave me his number. Finally, Steve. Holy mackerel. Boy, Steve. You know, I want you on the show, and the only way to have you on the show is if I call you. So, now, in honor of Steve being my favorite co-host, we're going to call him on the air. Let's do that. Let's call him. Unclick silent. And let's call him on the air. Let's see how he answers his phone. Oh, shoot. He might be listening to us right now. Do, 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 do. Call failed. Now, how the heck did that happen? Did you give me the wrong number? Let me see. Let's take this out. We'll try this. We'll take this out. Backspace. Take that out. Backspace. Take that out. Wait, hang on a second. By the way, Steve, my new partner, we're going to be sitting beside each other, and we're actually going to take seats that we're not allowed to take. But don't tell the Argos that, because it'll just get me in trouble. So let's just keep that. Let's keep that between ourselves.
Hello,
Stevie. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing fantastic. Canada won today.
Yeah, we might have to talk about that for a bit, too, because it's good to be Canadian today. It's good to be Canadian.
Definitely a great day to be Canadian today.
This would be Steve Richardson. Steve Richardson, say hello to John Granger.
Well, hello, John, and how are you today?
I'm not too bad, Steve. How's it going? How's it going, fellas?
I am doing great.
Awesome. Now I got two other guys on the phone. This one will be KB. Is this KB?
Yep. How you doing, fellas?
Hey,
all right,
KB,
all right.
How's it going? All right, and
very good.
And finally,
what are KB's colors?
Christopher Jones.
Greetings.
There we go.
Chris.
Okay. We're
hey,
all
Chris.
Here. Okay. So
how we
so
doing?
Obviously, Steve likes the new opening. Oh wait, no, that was Bruce. Bruce messaged me. He liked the opening. Steve didn't mention that he liked the opening. Maybe he was my
Bruce
favorite.
Bruce didn't hear it last week?
Well, it was kind of hard to get on. I actually made that just like 15 minutes before the show started, and I had to play it after the show was on so that I could, you know, get
it on.
Oh,
you played it last week. You played it last Friday.
Yeah.
Remember?
After that one, that same one?
Yeah, at the beginning of the show, yeah.
Oh, God, I'm napping.
Or it was in the middle at some point. Anyway,
I think
it was good.
I think it was in the middle. It wouldn't go up.
Believe
it or not, that's the two late. Bruce?
Oski Wee Wee.
And
where?
Finally, Oski Wee Wee. Okay. So I did this opening, and what I did was we had two openings, and John said, Frank, you got to do the other one. It gets me in the mood. So I took the other one. I took the jump one, and I basically played them at the same time.
You mixed
it? No, I didn't mix it. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I actually played them at the same time, and it worked.
Oh.
Awesome.
Yeah, because even the part goes, when I say Candid Frank Live on the jump one, it fits right in the new one. So, hey, this isn't bad. I'll leave it like this. because I was going to do what John just said, but I didn't have to. There was no work involved whatsoever. So we'll see you tomorrow at the lacrosse game, right, Bruce?
Absolutely, man. We're going to leave here about 3 o'clock, and then we're going to go to the pregame there.
Yeah, at Joe Badali's?
Yeah.
Jared has some tables set aside for us, and any of the listeners out there that want to come out to a lacrosse game, we'll be out there. Anyway, and also, of course, what's her name? Your sidekick. That cute girl that you hang. Phyllis. Yeah, that's right.
Phyllis Babbitt. Yeah,
you guys are going to Joe Badali's?
We are. We're looking forward to it, actually, man. I've never been to a lacrosse game, so this is going to be something new.
Have you been to Joe's before?
And I haven't been there either, so we could kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah. Well, I think you're going to have more fun at the lacrosse game than you're going to have at Joe's. Let's just... I'm not going to try to rub Badali's the wrong way, but it's just not a... Yeah, forget it. When you go in there and you come after a game and they go, shh, you know you're in the wrong place. And Frank, how's that pizza? Okay.
The pizza at Joe Badali's?
Yeah.
No, I've only eaten the box it comes in.
Anyway, enjoy, Bruce.
I will, man. Thanks, Josh.
All right. So we're talking, what are we talking? Football?
Okay.
We're talking
the top 10 draft picks, aren't we?
No, top 10 free agent signings.
Free agent signings, that's
okay.
It.
So did you guys get a chance to hear them? Or I could repeat them a little quicker than I did the first time. I was just having fun the first time. So
don't repeat them the way you did the first time. That was
okay. Because that'll take a long time, right?
Yeah, no.
Okay, Chris Melo, kicker, number 10. Why don't we do it like this? Chris Melo, number 10. Javon Johnson, number 9. Gary Koch. My God. Koch. Whatever his name.
Koch.
Number 8.
Koch. This is a family show, Frank. Be
remember
careful
that.
Yeah.
Okay, number 8, Gary Koch. Pat Watkins, number 7. Greg Butler, number 6. Nick Moore, number 5. Shea Emery, number 4. Number 3, Zach Collaros. Number 2, Josh Bork. And finally, Henry Burris at number 1. Do we dispute, do any of us dispute number 1, Henry Burris?
No, not at all. No.
Anybody
that
else?
Was a surprise in a lot of people. Well, what? It was a surprise and it wasn't a surprise, but yeah.
Well, the surprise isn't that he's our number one pick or the CFL.ca's pick. The surprise is that he actually signed with Ottawa when. But then if you talk to Christopher Jones, he'll tell you that wasn't a surprise.
That wasn't a surprise.
No.
It wasn't a surprise to me either, actually.
No.
I just find it amazing that they signed him, and I find it amazing that Hamilton let him go. But I'm not surprised about him being let go. I thought he'd get let go earlier in the year.
Well, you know what? I don't think he would have been let go if Toronto re-signed Collaros either. I think Hamilton was obviously just waiting, and then, you know. They knew what they were doing the whole time.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm for one, I can say that I was surprised, okay? They picked Glenn from Calgary to be their starter. They advertised him as the big pick. They showcased him, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, they go after Burris. Didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, but that was the only pick Ottawa could have made at that time, John. Kevin Glenn was the only guy up.
Well, if you're thinking about the fact that Hamilton was thinking of signing Burris. If that's what Ottawa was thinking, that the chances were going to happen, the rumor mill was already out of the locker room that Burris wasn't coming back. I'm sorry to break it to you, Bruce. I knew that also, but I
wasn't going to go put that out on Twitter either,
right.
Man.
And Ottawa knew that, too.
I knew that.
Ottawa knew that, too. Okay,
but until it's
that.
In writing, like you said, it's just a rumor, right? Ottawa needed to secure somebody like Kevin Glenn.
Bruce,
just in case
just
Zach Collaros wasn't
Bruce,
let go of Toronto.
Bruce,
that, but that shows
you,
how smart Ottawa is, doesn't it? Doesn't you know?
Absolutely,
you think about
Craig.
It, John,
they had
you
no.
Think
they
about
had
it,
to get
think
somebody.
Think about it, John. They signed Glenn because he is like you know, he was the guy at the time that they knew they could get their hands on, and they didn't think. I don't think when they picked Glenn, in my opinion, I don't think they believed they could have signed Burris. But I think they convinced Burris, and Burris convinced himself because they ponied up. you know, they, you know, giddy up with the money, baby. You know, they came up with a lot more money. They decided they could get him. So they were willing to pay that little bit extra that they had to pay to get him. So, you know, I think it's a great move for Ottawa. And they got trade bait in Kevin Glenn. And I think, guys, when we talked about this back in the day when the draft took place, I mentioned it, but I don't think I'm any brilliant guy, that they would be drafting guys that they eventually may trade if they're a good asset. And,
trade bait?
Think that's what – sure.
Trade bait. Trade bait? Who's going to trade for him? Yeah, he was left out unprotected. No one else is going to touch him. He's got a salary that's too big. You know, Winnipeg needs a quarterback.
Actually,
I
don't think he does have a salary that big, actually.
I don't think his salary is big at all.
He
was not a number one in Calgary. Tate was the number one in Calgary. He would have been getting the number one money.
Is he making,
no way Glenn
is he making
was.
Less than 200? Is he making less than 200?
Who?
Well, we had the
Glenn?
Numbers a little while ago. Glenn. And they didn't he pop the numbers out, something like 240, 260? He was making it, and Burris got three something, and a combined 620 or six. I don't know. I remember Manasseh was popping.
I don't think he's making
Glenn's
more than
numbers
two.
Are in the 150 range.
Yeah, I don't think he's making more than two, John.
No, Glenn's numbers are in the 150 range.
He was making backup money in Calgary. That's why they could afford to have three quarterbacks signed that they had faith in.
But
I have it right here. It's $180,000 and a bunch of performance incentives based on how many games started and whether or not they got to the playoffs. So there you go, $180,000.
So
who did you get that from?
Pardon me?
Where did you get that from? Just for us to know.
That's from a CFLpedia.
Yeah, that's on the CFL.ca webpage.
No.
Right? Isn't it an icon?
It's from CFLpedia. It's basically like a Wikipedia generally for the CFL, and they have all of last year's salary data updated on there.
Well, the point is that he starts at 180. If he doesn't accomplish anything, he stays at 180 in Calgary.
Yeah.
He's part of something that's good, then he makes more money. So he probably got some change for making the playoffs. Right, Kelly? He probably got money for the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Performance bonuses, games that he played, he probably in and around equal of what they would have both agreed on, because I assume for the 180 in the signing, Calgary would have said, well, listen, if you play half the games, that's great. If you play more than half, we'll give you a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I could see that being played out, right?
Yeah, it probably wasn't a per game thing. It was probably if you play more than half the season's games, you get a certain amount, 35 on top or whatever.
Yeah, because if you're playing less than half, and this is just a generalization, and there's no fact behind this, but if you're playing less than half the games, you're not the starter, so we're not going to give you an extra blah, 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 because the other guy's got performance bonuses.
Bingo. For somebody to take on 180, I mean, that's not out of this world for a backup QB in the CFL. I mean, it's pretty much the standard going rate these days with the quality at quarterback that we've assumed over the last three years in the CFL here. So,
how much is Kolaros getting? Three and change, right? Three and
too
change.
Much.
I can't remember.
Think he's getting
say.
That much?
No.
He's making I think two and change. 250. In year one, $350 or something in year three. He really wasn't getting paid that much, in my opinion.
The point is he probably has bonuses, too, in his contract.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right? So
in that situation,
Hamilton is saving money by signing Kolaros over Burris.
Oh, big time.
This year.
Oh, at least $200,000. Sure.
Hey, if I'm Burris and I just brought my team to the Grey Cup, I would ask, you know, what he ended up getting from Ottawa probably is what he expected from Hamilton.
Yeah.
He just didn't get it in Hamilton.
Yeah, and he's closer to his family now, too, so all the better for him.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So everything's roses for Burris.
Yeah, everything's roses, man.
Unfortunately, landed on Glenn.
Well, you know, that sometimes happens.
Question, guys.
That happens in every job, though, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to step, you know. Happens
go
in
ahead,
everything.
Steve. What's your question?
Jump in, Steve.
Sorry, guys. I was just wondering, how do you think Glenn feels about this now? Because now it's starting to look like he's going to be a backup quarterback, or what's going to happen with him now?
Well, I don't think
he's not happy.
Happy
with where he is. He's not happy at all.
There was a bunch of stuff that
right
was tweeted out a couple of weeks ago, and then he came back.
No, from the draft,
his Twitter account was hacked.
Yeah, that's
let's agree on one thing about Kevin Glenn. He's a seasoned pro. He's a great quarterback, and he's got a lot of class, and he hasn't come out whining publicly, and that's admirable.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the first day of free agency, Kevin Glenn tweeted out that he was extremely pissed off about what's going on in Ottawa, this, that, and everything else, and he called them out. And then he posted later that says his Twitter account was hacked and that wasn't him that was doing that. He says, I've remained silent through all of this for the last 2 or 3 weeks. What makes you think that I would come out and say something like this now? I would not say that. He says, I'm a better man than that.
And
that's what
agree?
He basically said.
Would you?
Oh, 100%.
There's no
way that tweet came from him. I believe him 100%. But you could tell that he was not pleased with the situation. Yeah.
Well, come on, guys. You don't need telepathy to figure out that this guy's not happy.
No. No, He's asked to be moved. He's asked to be released. Ottawa will not release him. They're asking for a number one draft pick, and nobody in the league is giving him that.
Oh, they're not going to give. They're not going to not a number one draft pick, especially if it's a number one Canadian. I mean, come on.
A first round Canadian pick. It's not going to happen for Kevin Glenn.
Not in a million years.
So somebody out there has got to do something. There's three teams that could use him, possibly four, and BC, Toronto, Montreal, and Winnipeg does, but I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Don't you think, though, that Ottawa, if they're asking that, they're being a little bit ridiculous and they're just going in high? Because really, when it comes to Glenn, they're playing with the bank's money, aren't they? I mean, what did they lose for him?
They didn't lose anybody.
Right. It's house money, right?
They lost one of the picks. It was just they picked him up for free.
They got, but what they would have got in return, what they would have picked, other than him, if they hadn't picked him, what would they have picked up? They would have picked up probably a quarterback with a little less luster than Kolaros, right? A little less shine than Kolaros, but basically like Kolaros, not a full-time quarterback with full-time experience.
Well, they got DeMarco, which was exactly what that is, right?
Exactly.
It doesn't mean they were even going to pick another quarterback. They could have picked anybody else, knowing that they were going to do something else, but Burris wasn't on the market, so they had to grab the quarterback. And they grabbed the best available quarterback at the time. Nobody's arguing or disputing that Kevin Glenn was the best available quarterback. They grabbed him
up
fast.
But, Christopher, when you look at Burris, you get him for nada, nothing. It didn't cost them a thing other than money.
Other than a salary.
That's buyer beware, right? I mean, but there's no – like, once you sign Glenn, like, if you're going to trade for Glenn, you're going to lose a draft pick, whatever that happens to end up being, and you're going to have to pay him.
Yeah.
Because now his back
is up.
Well,
I understand exactly what you're saying. In all honesty, in all fairness, Ottawa doing the right thing right now would just release Kevin Glenn.
No, that is not the right thing to do. I disagree 100%. If I'm Ottawa and I don't have a lot of men in my lineup, I need some quality, and they got to get something, but they're not going to get a first round draft. If they got a second round draft pick in the Canadian draft, that'd be a home run.
Yeah,
I don't think anybody's going to give it to him. I think somebody will. I think Glenn's going to step up.
You know why, Frank? Because everybody's set at quarterback right now. Really, I mean, you can't say that there's a team that doesn't have kind of penciled in starter on the depth chart right now. Therefore, Kevin Glenn is going to be a late trade, or he'll be released late. And his value goes up as time goes, should a guy get injured in the preseason or first few weeks of the season or whatever. But can they afford to hang on to him that long? Like, I don't know how classy it is to hold on to a guy.
How are you gonna hold on to a guy
through the first 3 weeks of the season? Like, that's just really giving it to him, like, after having signed Burris
I hear you, but you know what? That's just, in my opinion, it's just him being upset because he feels like he was let down.
No, he was let down. Frank, he was let down. He was sold a bill of goods when he went to that city, and he got to the shaft. They bent him over the barrel, and they said, thank you very much. Now it's time for them to do the honorable thing and release him so that he can find a decent job through the rest of the season. And if they don't do that, there's a lot of respect for that manager.
But why should they do the rest of the other eight teams a favor? What do they owe
the other eight teams a favor. They're doing Kevin Glenn a favor after they just kicked him around.
That's a valid point. But my question right now, since you just said that, what happens if Henry Burris gets KO'd in the second week? Who do they go to then? Then they're going to kick themselves in the ass for letting Kevin Glenn go.
See, he could be the best trainer.
You always have to have a backup situation, and no matter what business you are.
Bruce, you're reading my mind, and thank you for reading it. At the end of the day, Glenn could be the trade that they didn't make that worked out great. Because,
I totally disagree, because I don't care what position you put me in. You have just pissed me off with this team and that management, and I will never trust you, and I will never respect you as a manager. So there's that player is caustic in the dressing room, and I don't care if he becomes number one.
I'll give in to you, Chris, because just for the sake of getting past this. So at the end of the day, whether they keep him or trade him, really is up in the air right now.
Yes.
Bruce is right that he could be handy if he's around. But you could be right, too, that he will never be happy enough to ever put on the uniform. And then there's the question of where he can go. Let's move forward. And the only way to do that is let's answer that question. Chris, you had some suggestions of where he could go. He could come here to Toronto. He could go to BC. Where else?
Montreal.
There you go. So there are other
options
there.
Montreal needs a quality backup, if not number one in there, because Troy Smith is still very much an unknown. If nothing else, they need a good quarterback mentor in there. He would be good in that. Lule is unstable, and so is Ricky Ray at this point in time. We don't know how long or how good they're going to be this season. So we need more than a quality backup in there. BC does have Buck Pearce, but we all know what Buck Pearce is. So Kevin Glenn is definitely an upgrade from Buck.
There you go. Okay, so number two,
let's move on. The other one is Winnipeg, of course.
Yeah, okay. But Kelly, I think, will say right now that Willie is the guy in Winnipeg. Right, Kelly?
Well, you know, you got to think that they brought him in to give him that opportunity. And, nothing says getting some insurance like a Kevin Glenn, but whether or not that would work out in Winnipeg, I'm just not sold, you know. Having been there for so long and the way he departed. I mean, I'm not suggesting there's bitterness there, but there is confusion. I mean, come on, let's admit it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's wouldn't be a happy home.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we all agree that he was the number one. I mean, when you can get a quarterback that throws for yardage that he did, play in the Grey Cup, unquestionably, he was the number one free agent.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Okay, then who was the number one? Because that's what this conversation's about. Since we don't all agree, and Chris, you don't, who's number one?
Well,
Butler?
Butler would have been up there. I mean, let's put it this way. Kevin Glenn and Zach Caleros were never really in free agency. They were both signed prior to the beginning of free agency.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little misnomer by putting them into this list at all, but they were free agents prior to that signing, so that's where it was. I mean, we all know that the list of free agent signing, or the free agents that were available, the top three were Josh Bork, Nick Moore, and Craig Butler.
Okay, so which one of them should have been number one? In that order, or was that just...
Well, Josh Bork never really got into free agency. Montreal signed him the day before or the morning of or right away. It was very quick, so he really didn't even count into that thing. So he was really never out on the market. So I don't think that if your team re-signs you, I don't think you count as a free agent.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's not a free agent
signing.
It's a re-sign. It's an extension. It's a re-signing. It's whatever.
Yep.
So, you know, you can take these guys out of here who re-signed with the same team. Josh Bork was one of them. And actually, I think he's the only one that was, wasn't he? No. Chris Milo.
No. Milo, yeah.
Milo's
well,
the
listen,
only other one
listen,
that signed
listen.
His own team.
A guy who didn't have a guy who didn't just to make it simple so we don't debate who's a free agent, who is. If a guy didn't have a contract and was able to sign with anyone, it doesn't matter when they did it, when they became free, as long as I'm going to go by that definition, that anyone who any player that had the opportunity to sign with any other team, to me, is a free agent. Doesn't matter when, doesn't matter why, doesn't matter, you know, whatever. So at the end of the day,
according to the CFL.ca, you're correct. That's a correct statement.
Well, that's all that matters to me right now. Not that I'm correct, but that we agree on how to do it, how to do this.
it is. I'm just saying that it's not a
okay. So did I hear?
With Josh
did I hear an answer? Did Christopher answer which one he felt was number one?
No, I said the top three free agents available were Nick Moore, Craig Butler, and Josh Bork. Bork signed back with his own team, so I don't really consider him that. So it was either Craig Butler or Nick Moore. And both of them were on the opposite sides of the ball, and I think they were both equally as important to whoever the teams that got them and the teams that lost them.
Mm-hmm. And defense wins championships.
Yeah,
defense
we had that debate before.
I would have to say Craig Butler was the number one, and they put him in at number six. I so disagree with that.
Well, Emery's no slouch, and he was, what, five?
No, Nick Moore was
four.
Emery was four, Nick Moore was five.
Okay. Yeah, well, Emery's no slouch.
No, absolutely not.
Well, that's what got me going.
But I think if I had a choice between the two, I would take Butler over Emery.
Yeah, me too. Younger, more to go.
Yeah, harder hitter.
All right, so Butler's number one?
I would say that.
Okay, I'm going to stay
Out of all the free agents that were available, he's the one that I wanted in BC.
Okay, there you go. So on your list, he was higher. So that's great. That's great. So they say that Josh Bork was number two. So now what we're going to do is now that you know, and John's in there somewhere, where would you put Josh Bork other than two, if not two, John? Hello?
He's gone.
Oh, maybe he went to make himself a sandwich. He might have gone to make himself a sandwich.
Josh Bork is now the highest paid non-quarterback in the CFL. Highest paid player.
Wow.
For an offensive lineman?
Yep.
I know that offensive linemen are you know, a big deal.
Did you not,
right?
Did you not see the movie The Blind Side?
Was there
the highest paid player in the NFL?
Dexter Fan, actually a non-import O-line like Bork, who, you know, is also a stalwart in the community. I mean, he's the right guy to give that kind of money to. Like, they're replacing Scott Flory.
Well, I like him. He's a great person. You know,
yeah.
I'm not arguing with his taking number two. I just have a problem with Montreal taking a Montreal player and counting into this. But he is definitely the number, you know, short of a quarterback, he's there.
For sure.
He's a wet dream for whatever team had him.
And they should, you know, be very, you know. So not now. So is he number two or not? Butler? So Josh Bork then not number two. Butler number two. Is that where the vote is going? Butler number two. So
sure.
Does Josh Bork slip into three ahead of Zach Collaros?
for sure ahead of Kolaros. I mean, on the defensive side of the ball, you gotta give it up to the fact that Butler had as many sacks as he did this year coming in.
Well, no, we already. I was talking about Josh Bourque. We already all. I'm not saying it's unanimous, but most of us agree that Butler is number two, ahead of Josh Bourque, who was named number two. So does Josh Bourque slip to three ahead of Kolaros or beyond, below three? That's what I'm asking.
Oh.
So would you consider anyone else ahead of Josh Bourque, including Kolaros, or would you put him at three, Kelly?
Well, there's Nick Moore in the discussion. And
there you go.
No,
well, that's what we're getting at.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to discern here from my friends and the foes in the CFL fan base.
That's right. And, it comes down to what you think, you know, when you're talking Shea Emery, Nick Moore at that, you know, 4, 5, 6 position. You're talking about guys who, you know, it's your pick, like whether you think they can have an impact on that particular incumbent group or not. And that's why, like, in Saskatchewan, I'm really holding out for Ted Laurent, because that's the guy out of all those names that's going to have the biggest impact on our lineup.
And that's
see him fitting in.
And that's 100% the point that I'd like to put out there. And that is that the top 10 free agents refer to players with experience, right? A. B.
Yeah.
What you hope with a top 10 free agent is that not only does he bring what he has, he brings out better out of the players you have already.
Yes.
Kelly, you hit the nail. That's exactly the direction that I guess what I'm trying to get to here, guys, is that we can put each of these guys ahead of the other based on their own ability. But the other question has to be, when you sign a free agent, you're also trying to sign some leadership. Don't you think?
For sure. I mean, look at Saskatchewan last year. I mean, yeah, Giroux on offense, right? Everybody talks about him quite a bit because he's a super high-profile player. But, you know, you look at Weldon Brown and what he did last year as a Rough Rider. That guy had a monster year for us and was the single greatest acquisition we made last year. No kidding.
Absolutely. So now, other than, well, I don't know if it's fair to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Other than Chris Melo and Gary Koch, which I know a kicker can give you a good field position, but I'm saying in a prototypical way, I'll go through the 10 guys and to make my point and see, not just make my point, but ask you guys. Number one that the CFL.ca had, I think it's fair to say that Hank Burris could have an effect on the team. Right? He can make the guys around him better. I think
sure.
Josh Bourque, I don't know. To me, not so much. Zach Kolaros, in the future. Now you start talking what you guys are saying, because I'm also listening to you guys. Shea Emery could have a good impact on his team, the Argos, that he is now. Nick Moore, 100%. Craig Butler, even better. Patrick Watkins, even. These are guys that are going to jump. Javon Johnson, going to jump into a lineup. And one thing I like about all these guys I just mentioned, they're guys that good rubs off them.
For sure.
Okay, we got somebody else in here. Who else just came in to join us?
Danny came to see you, buddy.
Salonen.
What's going on, brothers?
Nothing. You didn't Skype us this time. What's up?
Oh, I just got home. I just got home from watching the Lego movie with my kids.
Right on. I want to go see that movie, but all my kids saw it.
We're talking about CFL football. We can't talk about the Lego movie.
There you go. Okay.
Yep.
So, Danny, welcome to the program. And we're talking about the CFL.ca's top 10 and how do we read what they decided and do we concur with their, you know, their decision, mm-hmm. their decision on the top 10. And for those of you that just joined us, like Danny Salonen, number one, Henry Burris. Number two, Josh Bork. Number three, Zach Caleros. Number four, Shea Emery. Number five, Nick Moore. Number six, Craig Butler. Number seven, Pat Watkins. Mm-hmm. Number eight, Gary Koch. I said it right that time. Sorry, Gary. Number nine, Javon Johnson. Number 10, Chris Melo. So we've arrived at a mutual agreement here, and pretty much the only one thus far, and probably the only one we'll have, that Henry Burris was the number one pick. And we also
I'm not agreeing with that.
Oh, okay. The majority of us, except for Chris and John Granger, abstained. So basically.
No, I didn't. I agree with Chris on this. What are you talking about, abstained? I totally agree. I don't think Burris was the best pick. Burris is going to another startup team like he did a few years ago with Hamilton. He's going for the money over there. There's no hope for Ottawa this year. What are you guys talking about?
Okay, so then, John.
Okay.
We'll give you a chance to answer the question that was asked while you were away. Who then, if Henry Burris is not the number one free agent pick this year, who would it be?
Caleros.
I know.
There you go. Okay, that's Caleros. And so now we move Josh Bork down a bit. So guys, Caleros number. Obviously, most of you agreed that Burris was number one, except for Chris. Okay, we'll do one at a time here. Okay, we'll do one at a time. We'll do one at a time here. No. Okay, so number
before
two.
Before you do this, Frank, I want to make a little statement here. I think that the free agency, the value of this, has a lot to do with how many teams would have wanted that player. Henry Burris, only one or two teams would have wanted that player. Craig Butler, 8 teams would have wanted that player. I mean, the Riders would have wanted to keep that player if he was affordable, okay? No, everybody would have wanted Craig Butler. There's no team out there that wouldn't. There's no team out there that didn't want Shea Emery.
There's not one team out there
that didn't want George Burns.
But
how many teams
still
wanted Zach Caleros?
Then you know.
Oh, come on! What are you talking about? What are you smoking out there in BC? I mean, Winnipeg wanted him. Ottawa wanted him. Hamilton obviously wanted him. Calgary was thinking of wanting him. Are you reading this
I didn't say that nobody wanted him. I said how many teams would have wanted Zach Caleros.
But Christopher,
that's what I'm saying. I think
Christopher.
Well, evidently Hamilton.
And I'm
going to
tell you, it's real simple. The disagreement I'm going to have with you is real simple. And I apologize for tearing you down so hard because this is going to hurt. This is going to really hurt. Then why don't we put them in order of their salaries?
There you go.
That's just like saying, okay, who got paid
there
the
you
most?
That
should determine it.
In order of salary.
Okay, wait. Before we put in salary, I want to ask one question first.
Uh-oh.
Every single team back in the day wanted Casey Printers when he was down south. Every single team went, they all had ready to meet with them. Hamilton Tiger Cats went down there and busted butt and flumped over a whole bunch of money. And what did happen? We got Casey Printers, and Casey Printers sucked so much because he's like, I don't need all this because I got the money.
Danny, I get what you're saying, and there was a lesson learned either by him or Hamilton didn't use him properly, because I think a little bit later he had a pretty good year in BC. I think he went back home.
But everybody, okay, Hamilton still does this. Unfortunately, they do this part. I bet you any money, if Burris, before he came to Hamilton, if he got offered more money into like a different team, he probably would have gone to them. For instance, if Edmonton offered more money.
Is there a problem with a player going where he's offered more money?
No, it just shows that all he's worried about is the money. Like, Hamilton's probably still paying for Burris.
But hang on a second. Didn't we just – okay, the relationship is between a player and a team, right? Did we not establish – oh, no, Danny, you weren't here, so you weren't here for this part. A team isn't generally loyal to players either. You know, like, the irony is we're talking about Burris, and that brings always – you know, that'll always tie Glenn to Burris, right? I mean, Ottawa wasn't very nice to you know, to Glenn. So, you know, there are no angels here. This is a business. And the players are going to go for whatever reason, you know, and whatever desire they have, whether it's they want to play at home or whether, you know, there's a lot of CFL players who probably take a little bit of a pay cut just so they can play near home. You know, because if you're making $150,000 and it costs you $230,000-$400,000 to set up a new home somewhere, and you could stay near home where you're already set up, and you know it only costs you $30,000 or $40,000, heck, I'm staying home.
Exactly.
Yep. So there's a lot of players that do that have
so
traded
money,
to go
yeah,
closer to their
saying.
Home. Ricky Foley was one of them. Ricky
that's
Foley got offered more money by BC, and he went to Toronto because he was close to mommy.
Exactly. Well, it's not. It's what I just said right now. It isn't just mommy. It costs more to relocate yourself. You know, if you live one place and you play elsewhere, you still got to have a place to live.
I totally agree. No? Okay, I agree with that. I agree with that totally, Frank.
But we're not talking
I
about Burris.
I know we're not talking about Burris. We're talking about other players and other teams and
right.
everything like that.
Okay.
That's all I was just worried about, you know. But you guys have shown me now that I was totally wrong, which, like I said, I don't know the outside of the rules of the CFL.
Nobody
and stuff. That's why I was that's
you're
why
not
I
wrong about
program.
Anything, Danny. You're not wrong about nothing because you came in here with your opinion, and your opinion is never
yeah.
wrong, all right, unless you're trying to drive
it
down
somebody's
throat. unless
no.
you're trying to drive it down somebody's throat. At the end of the day,
the only thing I'm driving down.
Wow.
You're not.
The only thing I'm saying when I'm driving down people's throats is saying the Hamilton Ticats are the best team in the CFL. That's all.
And that's your opinion.
Exactly.
And that's your opinion. Now they got another team to worry about, known as the Ottawa Red Blacks, with your old quarterback.
With a big woman.
This year, you're probably right, Danny.
Yep. But
okay.
my kids are going to bed, but I got to go off, guys. So have a
okay,
good night. I got to say goodbye to my kids.
You just wanted to stick your nose in. Good for you.
I'll see
okay.
wee wee, brother.
All right.
See you guys. I'll talk to you guys on. I'll talk to you guys on the next show for sure.
You bet.
Okay,
all right.
Talk to you then, Danny. All right. So Danny flew in.
Have a good night, guys.
He came in here and flew in, and now he's flown out. And nice to hear from you, Danny. It's too bad another Hamilton Tiger Cat fan has to get airtime. But, you know, I guess Mike's not here, so it's okay. Now.
Oh, but that's right.
Oh, okay, if you insist.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Okay,
I
number
no. going. No.
Well, you're the one that told me I don't wear my Argo.
Rather be a
Tiger
Cat than you know what.
Enough. You're the one that told me I don't wear my Argo hard enough. Okay, so the Alouettes re-signed Josh Bork. Valuable in the sense that for him, then let's try it this way. They know what they're getting, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they're willing to pay for that, whatever they pay them.
Sure.
Okay, so we agree with that. So now, Zach Caleros, he comes in at 3. Higher or lower, or is he in the right spot, John Granger?
Too high. But you
too
know
high?
What? Yeah, he's too high.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Where would
you
see him fitting in the top 10, John?
You know, I always thought he was a good backup. And, you know, my criticism on him, he can't throw more than 20 yards accurately. And Hamilton's going to see that. Austin likes him because he's got great legs. Okay. I mean, the guy is awesome in the pocket.
Oh.
Some of the moves, I think they got him for that mostly. And if he can throw accurately, you know, within 20, I think they're going to have a good season with the guy. I don't know if he's worth the money right now that they're paying him. And really, we're talking about big numbers when we're talking anything over 250 for a quarterback in the CFL, guys. So he's making good money, I think a little bit overpriced.
Yeah, that's a fair statement. What about anyone else, number 3, lower or higher? Zach
yeah,
Cole?
I agree with John. I think he should be like number 7, maybe.
Yep.
At least on
any list, really. He's a
okay.
new. He's pretty much a new quarterback stone.
Yep.
You know?
Bruce, as a Ticat fan, do you find it ironic that you've got Ken Austin, who is a dropback passer who probably couldn't run very well, and he signs a guy that can't throw and can run real well? Well, kind of ironic, really.
I'm still.
Well, I
got to trust in the coach. You know, he's especially after being in the position of being a quarterback himself. He obviously knows that position. He knows what he wants. He knows what he's looking for. And, you know, like, you know, if you put everything together that he did last year, Henry Burris maybe played 60-70% of the games. And the rest was Dan Lefevre and Mazzoli coming in. Right? So I don't think Hank ever played a whole game even last year. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how much he does that this year with Cloris, Lefevre, and Mazzoli.
I'm saying the dark horse this year is Mazzoli. I think it's Mazzoli's the dark horse in this.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the dark horse. Okay, so number four, Shea Emery, higher or lower? I think he's, you know, number four, I think, is a nice spot for him. I just happen to think that he's going to really help Tim Burke, ironically. He's going to help Tim Burke coach defense to the Argos. He's there to help Tim Burke establish the message and then get the guys to buy in. So in my definition of a good signing, he's up there really high because I think that he's a big asset other than what he can do personally. He can affect the rest of the players really well. That's why, I'll say four, but I would put him as high as three. Higher or lower?
I agree with you. I agree with him.
Higher or lower? Christopher Jones?
Well, I think the top three in here are Emery, Moore, and Butler. So, and I'm not sure what their positioning is. So higher than four, damn straight, because he's in the top three.
Okay, gotcha. John, you think the Argos got a top four or better or worse in signing Emery?
I mean, I like Emery a lot. I mean, everybody would like to have Emery on their team. I can't say anything bad about the guy. I think he sees an opportunity here in Toronto. When you come to a team that came off a Grey Cup championship just 2 years ago, the nucleus of the team is still there. Mind you, Marcus Ball, that's painful. Now, we haven't talked about him. You brought him up a little bit at the beginning of the show, but that was painful. But Emery is going to be a great fit for us. If we can get three more of Emery's, I think I'll feel a little bit better. Right now I'm a little bit worried.
My God, are there three Emery's out there? Are there three
more
Emery's out there?
But you're talking about your team now, not with the position of him in the...
Right.
You're showing concern for the Argos.
Right.
And that,
which
right?
Well, he's basically saying that Emery won't be enough to lift the team. They've got other holes they need to fill, and I get that. But I guess,
but
John, what they're hoping is that he'll turn a couple of this. Yeah. So, John, you're okay with him at four?
I'm okay.
Yeah, okay. Everybody else okay with him at three or four?
I'm moving Craig Butler up from the list, and I'm also moving Nick Moore up above Shea Emery or Zach Collaro. So,
okay, so you're in with Chris then. Chris mentioned those three names. Well, actually, Burris.
Yeah.
He didn't even include Burris in that formula, in the top three. So you'd keep Burris in number one or close to that, and those three guys that Chris mentioned would be two, three, and four. However you want to slice it.
Exactly.
Okay. Anybody else? Shamory done. Okay. Number five, Nick Moore. All right. We've heard Chris. We've heard Kelly. Nick Moore moves up to two, three, or four. John, is he good at five, or do you think maybe he's better than five?
I hate doing the scale thing, really, guys. It's a discredit to whatever position we put him in, unless they're all one, you know, meaning one is the
agree.
Best. You know what I'm saying?
That's a fair statement, but we're just you want to stop doing this then? You want to stop doing this?
Yeah, kind of. You know, to me, they're all good, and anything can happen. These guys, we wouldn't be talking about them if they weren't good. So, and I like all of them. You know, I got nothing against all of them because these guys are people that people wanted. The teams wanted these guys. And to classify them 1 to 10, you know, I guess at the beginning it was all right, and now I'm getting a little bit too judgmentally feeling wrong about it. So.
Don't worry about it. You're not hurting anybody's feelings. Hey, okay, then
you
try
know,
this.
John's right here. The only thing really we should do here is pick out the top three that Hamilton picked up. Right, because that's really what would count there. It's not about the league. Or better question is, who didn't make the list that you think should have?
Yeah, well, we were going to go on to that. You know, we do have 2 hours, and we still have an hour left, an hour and 5 minutes.
Well, I was going to ask something different. I was going to ask, and I answered already my own. Who do you think your team lost that hurt you the most so far?
Oh gosh.
Marcus Ball.
Marcus Ball. I was just going to say the same thing, John.
Yeah. So, you know, all Argo fans, I think, will agree upon that. But the rest of you guys, I mean, that's where the pain comes in. You know, we feel joy when we get a good player. But I think losing Marcus Ball, to me, is like I need to get two great players to make up for that loss.
Let's get down to 10, and then we'll move on to the next subject, John. It's nice that we can jump around and be haphazard about how we do things. But I like to have a little momentum, a little. If you don't like the answer to answer the question, then we'll move quicker. So now we've got Craig Butler. So you guys have seen the list. You guys don't have any. Everybody's out of opinions on these players. So then you don't care about where these guys sit. Does it matter to you?
Doesn't matter.
Then let me try this. This is the next thing I wanted to try. And the next thing I wanted to try is, should the top 10 be all defensive players since defense wins championships?
No. Because it's about team needs. Sometimes you're set at D. You know what I mean? Yeah. Sometimes you need that offensive spark as your number one guy.
Okay, so then having a kicker in the top 10 is okay. Having a quarterback in the top 10, having it heavy,
for sure.
It is heavy loaded. It is heavy loaded with defensive players.
Kickers,
because that's
be
what was available,
guys.
And that's where my question was: who didn't make the list that should have? Because I think Jamal Johnson going to BC was a much better scoop than Chris Milo.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up.
Exactly. Mm. Good call.
Okay.
I think JJ should have been on this top list because he's one hell of a linebacker.
He had the most tackles for a team last year.
I don't know.
That's another defender.
That's the one thing that I wanted to bring up.
So he takes over the kickers. He takes over the kicker's position, and now you've got a wide receiver, Nick Moore, another receiver, Caleros, and an offensive tackle and a quarterback. Still pretty close to half and half. So I guess that goes without saying. Okay. So now. I'm waiting for somebody to send me their phone number because I was hoping to take a break from talking about football and spend about 10 minutes, 15 minutes before the end of the show on the Olympics. Because we're talking about Canadian Football League, and I think the Canadians have done well in the Olympics. Amazingly
here.
Well. So mm-hmm. So anyway, I got a friend that he's a part owner of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, and I wanted him to come on, and I'm waiting for him to give me
Kelly
his number
Dale?
So we can. No, not Kelly, but Kelly's here already. Somebody who isn't here, someone Kelly knows. See, his name's Scott Nichols. I'm hoping that he's been on the show a few times.
Scott,
I've become a partial owner of a community-owned team.
It's because he has.
Well, he has
a lot of people. Go ahead, Kelly.
Well, you know, Chris. We have the non-official, non-entitling rider share, and I believe Scott, as a super fan, does have a rider share, and that's all Frank's referring to here.
That's all.
Okay.
Thank you, Kelly.
Yep.
And well, if he sends his number in, then we'll do it. But anyway, so let's continue until he sends me the number so I can call him. All right, so then, John, you said, repeat again, who was the player that you feel? I mean, it's getting to be a laundry list with the Argos of guys you wish you hadn't lost.
Oh,
I
God.
Wish I hadn't lost.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned a couple already.
Yeah, I'm still worried about this McCune thing. It's because of the injury that his longevity during the season is a question mark. And that's what they're kind of haggling over a figure, I believe. You know, he's worth the money, and his actions speak louder than, you know, the words that people are talking about him. But I'm not sure about his injury-prone, you know, stuff that's been going on the last couple of seasons. And the games that he plays, he's great, right? But the important games, he's, like, injured, banged up, and it's one of those things that right now I'm worried about because I love to have him, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's going on too long, you know? It's,
okay.
He should have been signed by now. Let's put it that way.
Okay, Kelly, who do you think Saskatchewan lost that hurts the most?
Well, guys, I don't think there's any doubt in anyone's mind, and if there is, that's okay. But, you know, it's Corey Sheets, I mean.
Yep.
I'm going to concede that it's not impossible to get another running back in that can do 1,000 yards. You know, that's not going to be mission impossible. But at the same time, you're not going to find a back that's going to get 2,000 yards.
Well, therein lies the problem. Christopher, who have you lost in BC?
I think our biggest loss, well, we lost Nick Moore. We lost Middleton. We lost the quarterback, Josh Bell. Nobody is going to affect our team in any way, shape, or form. I'm really disappointed with what's going on with Kieron Williams. Wally Buono has said the last offer's on the table, and I'm not phoning him. Kieron's sitting at home. He says if Wally doesn't show me some respect and phoning me, I'm not going to phone him. So they're acting like a couple of little children. And Kieron Williams is not accepting phone calls from any other team. So he's being an idiot. He's our biggest loss in that aspect. And I think we just lost, we just released Paris Jackson too, so that he could go to another team in the CFL. So he's going to show up somewhere tomorrow.
Okay, Steve,
so,
how about you?
Well, I'm with John when it comes to Marcus Ball. I think that's a big loss for us. But when it comes to some of the players that we're losing in that, when they're going over to the NFL, I'm not so upset about it because another CFL team's not going to benefit from that, if you guys
True.
Follow what I mean by that.
True.
Yep.
Good point,
mm-hmm.
Steve.
So losing Marcus Ball, going over and trying a career in the NFL, I don't feel so bad about in that respect, but I think he is a great loss. He was one of my favorites, so...
Me too.
Other than that, really, I got nothing.
Okay.
nothing
All
else
right.
that really stands out for me.
All right, my buddy Scott Nichols is taking a break from video editing to join us on the program. You're listening to Candid Frank Live. This is, of course, the Friday night CFL show. We're taking a little break now to talk Olympics. And on Facebook, Scott mentioned something that really stirred my grits. My grits were really stirred by it. And that is, and what did Primetime lead with today, Scott?
They actually touched on the Olympics. I was shocked. I was blown away, especially after the debacle last night on the National Hour.
Can you believe that? Can you believe that?
Fill us in,
you know,
please.
Okay,
rap
we'll fill
dues,
in.
Rap dues.
Scott, yeah, see, Bruce knows. Scott, go ahead.
I don't
go
get
ahead.
TV, so I don't know what to talk
okay.
about.
Okay, what it is, Scott, explain what you posted. You posted basically your unhappiness with the attention. Two great gold medals yesterday didn't get.
Exactly. I mean, like, it's a three-hour program. 1 hour is national that's sent out to the affiliates, and at least the affiliate that we have here. The national hour was the first 25 minutes was a discussion with the GM of the Toronto Raptors. And I'm kind of like,
are you
what?
Shitting me?
I expected – oh, I'm serious.
Okay.
I was expecting some
– no foul language.
You know, at least some discussion, right?
Right.
Here we are.
And then
here
what
we
was
are.
The next segment? The next segment was Jay's, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I don't think they even talked about the gold medals at all in the hour, did they?
They mentioned it off the top that you could watch the replay, and they grudgingly said it because it was on their competitor network. You could watch the replay of the gold medal game at 7:30 Eastern.
Right. Okay, so here's what we're talking about, because in a previous life, I used to do sports play-by-play of many different games, many different sports, lots. And one of them was women's hockey. And I got to tell you, I'm talking 20 years ago, okay? Hazel McCallion was at center ice dropping the puck and promoting women's hockey. At the time, I used to do the Seneca Braves. There was a young lady named Angela James. Now, Angela James and I broadcast at least 25, 30 of her games. And this girl was a monster. She just, you want to talk about Bobby Orr, you want to talk about Guy Lafleur, you want to talk about Gretzky. None of them in their league had the power and the control and just the freedom to do whatever she wanted on the ice than this woman did, which also was a downside of women's hockey, because the difference between the good and the not so good was a very wide range. Now, we're talking about women who are playing at a pretty good clip, and they're playing at a pretty even, you know, dare I say, this will sound sexist, and I don't mind, I have four daughters. It's like watching a men's game now where you actually have competition. And for you to understand why I'm saying that, you would have had to, Scott, have watched women's hockey 20 years ago to understand why I'm saying that. It looked like men versus boys back then. Now, here's an American team with all the, you know, the strut. I mean, we are it. You know, I don't think there was a team, there's been a team in a while that felt that they were more within rights of winning the gold medal. And Canada beat them, and they were losing 2-0 with just over 3 minutes left. Scott, how can somebody ignore what a great feat that was? By definition, why was it so great a championship for Canada and a gold medal for Canada?
I would have to say simply because of the fact that they were down 2-0. Both goaltenders were playing exceedingly well, but down 2-0, and here they are, 5 minutes to go in the game. I was actually live on the air on my radio station at the time. And for the first time in my life, when we won in overtime, I actually potted down the song right in the middle of it and said, Canada wins gold, Canada wins gold, Canada wins gold. It was a big deal. I could hear the newsroom cheering from down the hall through a soundproof door. And, you know, it's just the fact that Canada has embraced women's hockey with as much fervor as they've embraced men's Olympic hockey, I think that's absolutely fantastic.
Incredible. And you know, additionally to that, the women have carried the day at the Olympics. I'm very proud of what the women have done. Our Canadian women have been awesome, you know, and to think,
here.
To think if the fix wasn't in figure skating, we'd probably have another 2 gold medals.
Oh, God. Oh, don't get me started on that.
Oh. I just did.
Let's not go there.
I just did.
We're not spending more than 3 minutes on figure skating.
let's just be comfortable with taking 3 of the 4 top medals so far.
Now, we're going the double-double,
right,
boys. They play Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday at 7:30 in the morning. Well, 7
okay.
o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, okay. So we go for the double-double on Sunday. I mean,
unheard
of. Can you imagine,
the triple,
guys?
The triple-triple is sledge hockey in the Paralympic Games.
There you go. And I have a friend of mine, the goalie for that team, stopped. It's not funny. It's good.
They are amazing.
Totally amazing. And, you know, it is what it is. Anyway, back to the Olympics of the day. We can talk about that Olympics, Paralympics, when they come by. The fact remains that the women have done really well. And you know, Canada has actually done a great job of owning the podium. And we didn't really hear that much of pomp and circumstance and about the podium, Scott. But Canada has done really well.
You know, yeah, I have to agree with you 100%. I mean, like, if you look at, like, we're getting close to Vancouver territory, you know, and it was in our our home turf, and yep, we were expected to do well. But actually, I got into a little bit of a, how shall I say it, a urination contest with somebody on Facebook today about how they tally the medals. And this person was American, and they said, well, you know, actually, we have more blah, 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 medals overall. And I'm like, well, the IOC counts it gold first, then silver, then bronze. Well, that's not right. And I'm like, okay, well, you have yourself a fantastic day if you want to live in your little glass bubble where the grand total aggregate beats how many gold. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
I do have a problem with the medals in this thing, and because basically you go into speed skating, and on a short track there's the 500-meter, 1,000-meter, 1,500-meter, 2,500. These are all get gold medals for all of these things. Then you go into the long track and you do it again. And then countries like Norway and Netherlands chew this up because they're good at one sport. Well, Canada's really good at one sport, and we get one medal for it. You know, and to me, that creates an imbalance in the Olympics. Unless you want to wait for the hockey gold medal to be greater.
But you know what, Christopher? That's why I'm saying they're doing such a great job, because – you know, and Scott almost said it, and Scott, I hope you don't mind. I'm going to pick up where you were headed, and then move it ahead there. What I agree with is the fact that we did really well, and when Scott was talking about doing what we did in our backyard, what makes this Olympics more impressive is that they're doing it on the road. You know, it's
of course.
The advantage that we had. The advantage that we had at home is the advantage that Russia had. You know. They can turn the ice on the bobsleigh track up and down according to how they like it. They get to practice at night at the time or at night and during day whenever the events are taking place. They've had the opportunity to practice at the same time, which the experts tell me is important. You know, there's a lot of advantages in being the home team. You know, and for what Canada did at home, they accomplished what was the obvious, but it's not looking too obvious for the Russians. And now they're almost repeating what they did at home on the road. That's what I find so outstanding about our Canadian athletes. They've gone to a strange country and accomplished so much, and they're so focused. Did you guys get a chance to see the interview with the ladies? The hockey?
No, I missed that.
Oh, you missed a great interview. It was a fantastic interview. And I'm looking at the goaltender, and I'm saying to myself, Shannon, you look so tiny without your equipment on. And I was totally amazed at how focused these women were, even in the interview. They were so concise in why they were at the Olympics. They were so accurate in what they needed to do to win. And they were so, oh, well, we won the gold medal. They didn't seem giddy. You know, they were very businesslike, and the greatest move the Canadian team made was when they brought in the new coach, yes, a man, but a guy with a lot of experience. Things didn't start well for them, but they made the right decision, and what they were mentioning in the interview was they did a lot of groundwork since August, physically preparing themselves for the outcome and knowing that they were up against it with the American team. And I'm really proud of the way they played. Go ahead.
Absolutely, and I think they were way better. The Canadian women were way better conditioned. Their conditioning was far superior to the American.
Far superior.
Mm. Oh, for
you
sure.
Know, you could tell that in overtime.
Even the puck the Americans shot towards the empty Canadian net was tired on the way. Didn't know where the net was.
that has a lot to do with the ice conditions there at. What do they call it? The
Bolshoi
Arena or the Bolshoi, right?
That's
some terrible ice, guys. Let's be honest.
Notice that too when, like, as the period came to a close, the ice seemed to be worse and worse, and the puck kept wanting to bounce over sticks there a few times. Even in the men's game today, I noticed that.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like the Winter Classic.
Yeah,
almost. You know, I noticed what was the giveaway for me why I believe the ice is horrible is that even in the figure skating there wasn't a shiny spot on the whole surface.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
It looked dull and usually when you run a Zamboni, we can call it that, right? Over the ice, it shines. And the figure skaters leave, you know, they leave marks, but not like hockey players. You know, and there was no shine on the ice when I was watching Chan do his thing. And I'm looking, I'm going, this is weird. Why does it look like that? Should it look like that? And you guys are right. I'm not surprised the puck was bouncing. Or the boards weren't the only – what do they call the bottom part of the boards? Not the dasher. They called it that. No, that's the higher part. But anyway, the boards were lively. When the puck hit it, it almost seemed like it sped up.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Well, I know
I saw a great quote today on the empty net shot. Never before in history has 2 inches made 22 women so happy.
I knew you were.
Well, that's just horrible. Or unhappy. Anyway, Now on to the curling, because my children have really – I have four daughters, and they want to play curling now. They love the hats. They love the way they dress. They love the game. They love the fact that they play with things they call rocks because they're rock fans. And my youngest daughter, my 16-year-old, says, I want one of those hats. I'll wear that hat everywhere. Curling – is curling coming into its own, Scott?
Oh, like in Saskatchewan, curling has always been, you know, one of the king sports here as well. You know, but to especially for Jennifer Jones, I mean, she ran the table. She didn't lose a single game.
Amazing.
That's incredible.
Oh, can I ask a question about that, the curling there? I heard something that there was a record set, and I don't know if it's by a Canadian team or a team all around being undefeated for the first time.
That was Jennifer Jones' rink. They won 10 straight games.
It was 11, wasn't it?
11.
The
final.
Oh,
the final.
The
medal game made it was 11.
Three?
Did it make it 11 or was it the 10th game?
They were There were 9 round robin games that they went 9-0, and then they took the semifinal, and then they took the gold medal.
Okay, fair enough.
Right.
Well, regardless, 10 or 11, things start getting tough when you're 6-0. Never mind 10-0.
Oh yeah.
Wait.
Oh yeah.
Well, you have that pressure to keep winning, then, right? You have that pressure to keep being undefeated, and that rink just rose above everything, and you know. The accomplishment, it's almost a shame that it was overshadowed by the ladies winning the gold in hockey, because Jennifer Jones' accomplishment was amazing.
Oh,
totally amazing. And you know what was really amazing about Jennifer Jones? She is such a great leader. Caitlin, I'm sorry, I forgot her last name. Caitlin Dawes, and I hope she – nobody tells her this because I feel bad saying it, but I believe it to be true. She fell apart in the championship game. She had such a tough time gaining weight. She could not hit the right weight. And, you know, the irony of all ironies was that it looked like we were in trouble, and then Jennifer Jones steps up and does what the skip's supposed to do and save the day. But not only save the day, they choked. Sweden choked.
Oh, badly.
And, at the end there, the relief on Caitlin's face, you could see when they won. She was so worried that she would be the reason why the team didn't win, and I'm not saying that as a negative to her, but she and the team, they were such a good team together. They took care of each other. They supported her. There was not a single momentary lapse in any kind of confidence that they had. It really wasn't a really nice game to watch, because They showed me so much that Jones has always been respected as a great player, but man, how much more respected can that woman be?
I mean, did you guys see the semifinal game against Great Britain?
I did.
The final end that JJ shot, it was amazing. It was truly amazing, her skill.
Yeah.
It was great. So Scott, Now, if you had a chance, and primetime is that's the radio TV show you're referring to, right?
Right.
Okay. So for those that don't know, Primetime Sports, which basically is Bob McCowan, that he takes phone calls, and then also they go to air on Sportsnet, and then they go nationally too as well. So everybody sees it differently, but they do consider themselves. It isn't because they are women. You don't think it had anything to do with the fact that these were women that won gold medals is only a coincidence, right, Scott?
There's zero chance of misogyny going on there, because that's just a road that has a dead end, and no sports broadcaster wants to go down that.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So anyway, but the point being that then is just a coincidence, in my opinion, that it worked out that way. I hope that's the reason. I'm not saying it was or it wasn't, but I think it was unfair that they were treated that way. Probably one of the greatest moments in Canadian sports history. Canada behind by two. It doesn't matter what sex. With 3 minutes left.
Why not just call a spade and just say it like it is? USA was not happy that we won, not happy that they choked, and that the better team won. Just black is black, white is white, man. You know, all I read on Twitter yesterday was that, and I'm not going to say it over the air because it's a friendly show, family-oriented show, but that hashtag whatever Canada. Like, come on, man. We were totally disrespected right after we won that game. We got nothing but trashed on the internet. Not one American show that I saw made it a news issue. So, and if USA would have won that game, guaranteed Cowan, whatever his name is, that's the first thing that would have been discussed on his show.
It would have
been funny, too, because
go ahead. Okay, Scott, you first, then Chris.
Scott. Yeah, no, it was just, I just found it rather interesting, too, when you're talking about some of the American response to that game. There was some crying about what they call the non-call on Haley Wickenheiser. And, yeah, watching the replay, yeah, that was kind of a bogus call. But I quickly reminded everybody about London 2012, women's soccer, semifinal game, Canada-US, that bogus handball that was called that cost us the game.
Yep.
So I just said, you know, you guys settle down.
Well, you don't have to go that far back. You can go to the in this house we Scott Moyer and company are the big to do. So, you know, they're not getting a gold hurt a lot of people in my home. So I have to put that out there, and two of the nicest people in the world. The thing about the Americans, I think, in that game as well, I think I'm a firm believer of the hockey gods interfering in a game every so often. You know, the hand of the hockey gods was brought on, I think, by the fact that the Americans knew that the officials, or at least believed the officials, would bite, and there was a lot of diving in that game. There was a dive which caused the second goal, which created the second goal. On the replays, if you looked, the stick was about 4 or 5 inches away from the body, and you could see the American player diving in the air. So I think that was even, you know, it was evened up. You didn't even have to go back to 2012, Scott. In that game, the Americans were trying. They were pulling the old grab the arm and fall down trick, and it didn't. And thank goodness the British official didn't bite. Otherwise, Canada could have been in a deeper hole and definitely not win the gold medal. So as far as I'm concerned,
I think that was
the hockey guts. Go ahead.
I think that was a part due in part to here again. I'm going back to the conditioning of the Canadian women. The Americans were getting out skated. They were getting out hustled, and you know they had to do something. I mean, when you're behind and you're, you know, gasping at wind, I mean, you are going to start playing clutch and grab hockey.
And that's what they were doing. But I don't mind the part that you clutch and you grab, but the falling part's the part that bothers me, almost to give the impression that you were being held. And I saw a lot of that, and I think because of 2012, sometimes the Americans get a little bit, you know, when we talk about the Americans and we talk about sports with the Americans, being Canadian, you know, what bothers me now is that Don Cherry now has become apologetic for saying that Canadians have heart. Now he has to say the Canadians have heart. Yeah, and the rest of the world does too. I find that humorous.
No, he's being pressured to be so politically correct now.
Isn't that amazing? I just thought that, you know, at the end of the day, on that day, the Canadians had more heart in both, in all three games that we've seen where Canada, they've had more heart. And let's face it, guys, people win gold medals other than Canadians, and they do it because of heart and because of hard work that they do. And we've seen a lot of great stuff in the Olympics. And the speed skating, as much as we want to make fun of how many different types of races there are, it's amazing that you got a sport like that where a gold medal, by a fraction of inch, if you lean too far one way or the other, you could end up on the ice and not even be in the medal. So, you know, the Olympics have been very interesting. Scott, thanks for joining us. I know you're real busy video editing. And by the way, you're going to have to teach me how to do that someday.
Oh, absolutely. I'll give you the crash course at $100 per minute.
$100 per minute. God, I'm a slow learner. It's going to be expensive.
You're late. Well, good. Thank my retirement plan is now set.
There you go. Not if you're counting on money that I have.
Can't lead a dead horse.
No, you can't. Or get blood out of a stone. Scott, thank you
very much.
Scott Nichols, part owner of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, which was met by the people in this room with a guffaw. But then again, it was explained by Kelly Bale that it is an honorarium or an honorarium, whatever. Anyway, thank you, sir, for taking the time and get back to your video editing. I appreciate talking to you.
Anytime, guys. Have a great night.
You too, Scott.
Hey,
Scott.
Appreciate it, Scott.
Well, you can tell when you're around professionals when they're afraid to answer questions that are explosive.
Oh, yeah, you can't blame them.
No, not for a second. In fact, I should be smart enough not to bring it up.
Nah.
Yeah, but I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did because it's true. You know, the U.S., they choked. That's why they got mad. You know, it'd be a whole different story if it was reversed.
Okay,
but
we've got.
It is what it is.
We've got 34 minutes left in the. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, just wanted to comment quickly on the McCown stuff that Scott had touched on. I was having that same Facebook discussion with Scott yesterday, and it's just really unfortunate. And one word that I came up with to describe what kind of happened was. It's a Torontopoly is what it is. And you have a guy from Toronto who's mostly interested in Toronto sports talking about two Toronto teams owned by MLS, MSLE. You know what I mean? Like they own the network that they're on. And, you know, it's just all about priorities. And I don't really see that there's, you know, this huge insult or slap in the face to Hockey Canada and Canadians in general, or women, if you like, or whatever. But it sure is unfortunate. Let's just leave it there.
Okay, so it's more important where they need to go rather than where they didn't want to go.
Well, that's what it is anyways.
Yeah,
I'm
putting in words in my own mind so I understand what you said. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah,
And you know what? In fairness to them, they schedule guests, you know, and those guests are on. They have there's another two guys that what are their names? The guys that came from the network they just bought, Phil and Sid, or Sid and somebody, whatever. Anybody know who I'm talking about?
And Sid.
Thank you.
I think it's called.
Yeah, for sure.
In the middle of their show, they stopped the show to jump up and cheer when Canada won the gold medal, when they won the hockey game. So, you know, that's the same network. So, you know, in fairness to the network, this wasn't a commentary on the network. It just seems to me it's kind of, you know, can you imagine in 1972 if we were in this same situation and somebody decided to talk basketball instead of, you know.
Paul Henderson.
I'm just saying. That's the only point I'm trying to make. And I happen to think that game was as big as the 72 game in my mind because of the series, because of the way that game, what prefaced that game, if I can say it that way. You know, these two teams hate each other. They despise each other. And these are teams that play it with each other as, you know, teammates in other venues, CIS, you know, the U.S. colleges and the Canadian Women's Hockey League here in Canada. So that's why I thought it was that important. And the intensity, and I think it showed with the fans at Real Sports, they showed them how many people were at that bar, which is a pretty big place. Every school, my kids were watching. My kids were thrilled. I saw in my children's eyes watching that game and winning, and the screams that they made inside the room with me, I really felt like I was back in 72, and I actually can remember that because I'm old enough to remember that. So, you know, that's what I find so wonderful about it, and that's why it was worth for me to take a break from the football talk to talk about that. And, guys, I appreciate your willingness to come along with me on that little ride. Any closing comments on the Olympics?
Yep. Sunday morning, 7 o'clock, we're going to do the same thing against the U.S. Canada's team, boys. Go Canada, go. And on that note, well, I got to run, though. I've been wanting to let you go for about 10 minutes, but I got to go. Frank, I'll see you tomorrow, my friend.
Yep.
And
see you
for all the rest of you, have a great weekend. Go Canada, go, and we'll talk to you Monday.
Have a great time at the Rock game, eh?
All right, man. Thank you so much, my friend.
Take care, Bruce.
All right. Good night, guys.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right, so we talked about the top 10. We determined the top 10 wasn't that important because really it should be the top 50, and then we decided that it shouldn't just be the top 10. How about the top one that you lost or top two that you lost? We went through that. Now we got here's something. I hate to be selfish here and talk about the Argos, but I want to talk about the Argos on this.
Go for it, Frank.
Okay. they just decided who would be the coaching staff. How happy are we with the coaching staff? Any experts here? Oh, John left the room.
Oh. I don't really have too much to say about it, Frank.
Anyone else?
What, coaching staff?
No,
for the Argos or coaching staff?
Yeah,
of
how difficult
coaching?
Do you think it was? How difficult did you think it was for the Argos now? You know, they're pretty much a lot of they lost a lot of their coaches at the end of this season. Do you think they'll be okay in the coaching part of the equation?
You want my answer?
Yeah.
I don't care.
Wow. That's just cold.
I can step in and say something about the Toronto Argonauts. You know, I've been paying attention to the coaches they've signed, and sure, they lost some guys, and that is going to hurt. You know, it takes a while for a coaching staff to gel, just like it takes a while for an offense or a defense or a special teams unit to gel. So, you know, there's going to be some growing pains, maybe first half of the season, but shouldn't affect them throughout the whole season, you know. They should be able to put it together if they're professionals, and I think the guys they got are professionals.
There you go. Okay, so now.
I agree with that, Frank. And it's the same thing. There's two or three teams out there that had their coaching staff that was very solid. They didn't lose a few. There's other teams that had a complete overhaul, and Toronto and BC had complete overhauls of their coaching staffs.
Yeah.
And so did Winnipeg. So did Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So we're all in the same boat there. I mean, Benavides and you know, the O-line coach or something is the only guys that are still in the same position in BC. Everybody new OC, new DC, and got Hamilton, you know. I don't think Toronto is in any worse position than what any of the other teams are because of the turmoil that happened in the losing of their coaching staff.
That's why
I don't think it's a big deal. I didn't mean it because I don't really care about Toronto. I'm just saying that I don't think it's a big deal because there's parity. There's so many teams that were out there that the same thing happened to them.
So the Tiger Cats, Montreal to a lesser extent, assuming that Pop doesn't relinquish the head coaching job. In the East, and then in the West, you've got Calgary got a little bit of a obviously with Campbell going to Ottawa. Saskatchewan's pretty much the same coaching staff they had. They made a couple of small changes, right, Kelly?
Yeah, we lost one guy is all I can really think of, and I'm trying to think of who that was.
Thank you.
And I think it
the
was,
half back, the, oh. the backs the back run the backs coach.
We still have Baron Miles, I believe. He was the DB's coach last
Kahari
year.
Jones.
We lost Kahari. That was it.
There
that
you go.
You lost Kahari Jones.
Yeah.
I know where
that
he
was. That was the guy.
Yep. Gee, where'd he go, Chris?
He's my OC.
And I bet you care about that. I bet you care about that.
I'm happy about that.
Okay.
I would have been happy with Cortez, too.
We got about 26 minutes left, and which brings, I guess, we should be able to do well with this. Now, as far as the team-by-team, where they sit in the off-season right now, which teams have fared better in the off season, do you think? And I guess the way to say that would be, who has done more than you thought might have done, or been able to accomplish more than you might have thought they accomplished? Chris, team by team in the East, you know, start with the East. Did Montreal accomplish what, have they accomplished what, either what you think they could have, or are they still out there?
I didn't see Montreal do a whole lot besides signing their own players and losing a few. So I don't think Montreal's in as good a position as what they were last year, and I'm still picking Montreal to be last in the East this year.
Good. You're reading into what the point I was trying to make. So Ottawa, depending on what they get for Glenn, are they any better or any worse? Do you think they're moving on course to make the playoffs?
I said Ottawa has a good chance of being number one in the East.
Okay. And then Hamilton and Toronto.
Oh, well, Toronto is coming in three. Hamilton and Ottawa are going to fight for 1-2.
And you picked Hamilton to win the Grey Cup.
I did.
Has that changed?
No.
Okay. Out in the West, you know, we've got the defending champions being Saskatchewan. Now, what about they're probably still in the same place they were before.
Where?
Oh, no.
They came in second in the league last year, and I picked them in third or fourth this year. I'm not sure.
Yeah, like it's a toss-up, guys, for the top three in the West between BC. You know, I'm not ready to throw Winnipeg is like Manasseh is. I'm not ready to throw Winnipeg in that top three group. I'm still going to have Calgary in that group, but I see them dropping to that three spot, and I see the Riders taking over the two spot from them, and I see the Lions finishing first in the West.
Yeah.
How about you, Steve?
I kind of put the...
Oh, Steve left.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, you're still here? Okay.
Yeah, I'm just listening and learning.
Oh, yeah, good luck. Good luck with that.
I don't have the same kind of knowledge like most of you guys do, but I appreciate still being on the show.
Okay.
I think for the most part, when it comes to the East, I'm with Christopher on his picks. But I'm going to be biased. I'm going to say Argos are going to win the Grey Cup, but that's what I'm hoping for anyways. I don't know enough about the West. I was just wondering what you guys think, though, now that Winnipeg is going over to the West. Are they going to have an even harder time with doing well compared to being in the East? What do you guys think about that?
We talk about that all the time, Steve. You know, you talk about the East being better this year, possibly. You know what I mean? Like getting some road wins in the West. And, you know, that's a possibility. But I still see the West as the strongest division. And Winnipeg having to move into the West this year, I think it's just the worst possible scenario that could possibly be happening is this new building, bad year. Then you have to move into the West. I think it's another year of doom in Winnipeg, but I think their team got a lot better. You know what I mean? Like, you can still get better and not qualify from the playoffs from where Winnipeg was last year.
Yeah, the big question is going to be, will there be a drop-off in Calgary, enough so to give Winnipeg hope and inspiration to make the playoffs?
Right.
I don't think Saskatchewan's going at, what I meant to, well, it doesn't matter. Second or first really doesn't matter. Anyone who's listened to the show knows that I don't hold much in who finishes first, because to me that doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. What really matters is how you finish in the CFL, and it's always who's on a roll going into the playoffs. And sometimes you can get on a roll because you weren't number one, because you get a chance to win that semifinal game. If you will, in the East or the West, which gives you a portion of momentum going into the final in the East or the West. So the important thing, I think, is that Calgary really is on in my opinion, they haven't done anything that makes me – like, well, put it this way. Stamps has come out and he said, you know, we're, you know, in Edmonton, I want to win a Grey Cup, and I think we can do it with the team we've got and the coaching that we've got. And is he making a realistic statement in the West? Because we're talking about Winnipeg. We're talking about, you know, Calgary maybe faltering a little bit. And God forbid anybody suggests to Chris Jones, that Christopher Jones, that our friends in BC won't be making the playoffs. So, you know, two
I,
of those.
Exact opposite here. I don't think that that's true. I don't think Calgary is having any issues at all. I think with the addition of Adrian McPherson, they finally got themselves a good quality, consistent, durable quarterback in that position. And I don't think see Calgary going anywhere. If anything, I said that Riders are going to be in third or fourth position here, and it would be Edmonton that would be knocking them out. I can see BC, Calgary, Edmonton as the top three in the West. And I know I'm going to get yarked at for that one, but that's honestly where I see this to be.
So you,
I think
you
Edmonton
see
is going to come out and actually do something this year.
Because that's the real question, right? Of the three that made the playoff in the West last year, which one of them isn't, so that one of the two that it wasn't in last year will be in?
I think the Riders aren't going to come in. They lost Corey Sheets. They lost Weston Dressler. Who else did they lose? Kelly, there was another. Oh, Craig Butler.
You know
okay.
what, though? You're making great points, Chris, and everything, but, you know, there's the fact that they're going to have a 46-man roster on game day, and they're going to cut it down to 42 for game time. And, you know, they're going to get bodies in there that can do the
so
job.
So is every team.
So, yeah, right.
So is every
but
team,
I'm
right?
just saying
so
you can't really
all
talk
equal,
about
you lost
it until
your,
you know where
you lost your top three players.
Right.
Okay? Because you can't put DD in as your top player because he was only good last year because of the positioning of Weston Dressler and Corey Sheets. Now, if you guys can replace those people, and I think Taj Smith is a huge asset, and he's coming into his own, but I don't believe that he's still Weston Dressler yet. So, you know, you've lost your top three players on your team to free agency. That's got to hurt the Riders regardless of who they put into the positions. Okay?
Oh, for sure.
Not
it will
the leadership
hurt them,
side
but
of
not,
things
not
in the
to the point
thing.
Of fourth. It won't hurt them until fourth. You know, we retain our coaching staff. We retain good 37, 38 guys that won the Grey Cup.
So hang on, Chris. Hang on, Christopher. I want to jump in here. I think, and Kelly's not saying it, I just come right out and say it, is that he has a lot of faith in his GM. And he is fully confident and cognizant of the fact that the GM has proven over the past few years that he's more than capable of bringing in players who are giant assets, of which one of them is that's gone. There's a couple. They've lost a couple of guys. I'm less concerned with the running back problem they have, and more concerned with the two guys they lost that were developed, if you will, in Saskatchewan. And those players, a guy like Butler, he established himself through time, and Dressler as well. It goes without saying, right? These are all stars, and these are guys that were with the team. I find them to be more difficult to replace, and you must admit, Kelly, that those kinds of guys that develop within the team, you know, I'm not saying that the Saskatchewan's going to suffer because they're gone, but I'm just saying the opportunity is there for them to suffer because these are guys that grew up with the team, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, oh, for sure, and just like to point out that Saskatchewan's not alone in having lost guys to the NFL this year. We can all
no,
admit to that.
I mean, it's been a great year for that. CFL players.
For
I
sure.
mean,
and those
in
losses
Arbolan.
Are going to be collateral on every team. You know what I mean? And that's all I was saying to Christopher was it's not going to hurt us down to fourth place, I don't think.
What position did you finish
to rationalize that. What's
what
that?
What position did you finish in last year?
It was third
second.
Place, wasn't it, behind
well,
Calgary
third.
And,
yeah.
and BC?
Okay.
Yeah, one
you were tied with BC for second place, but because of the season series, you went in.
We won.
You got
right.
second place over it because we had
right.
identical
right.
records, okay? So that literally means that you were in third place. So any drop you could have been to fourth. Anything increased could go take you to second, if not first.
Yeah, but Chris,
all I'm trying to say is that it wouldn't be that much of a loss. It wouldn't be that much of a step back for the Riders to become into fourth.
Christopher, they didn't win the Grey Cup by accident, okay? And yes, they were at home, but they didn't win the Grey Cup by accident. They they won and they demolished Hamilton. And Hamilton, you know, accomplished their goal for the season, the biggest goal that they could have asked before the season started, which was beating the Argonauts in the Eastern Final. You know, they won their victory there. That was their victory. And emotionally, I don't think they could rise up to win the Grey Cup last year just because they had a lot of ground that they had to make up. And I think in a role reversal where Saskatchewan was favored to win the Grey Cup, where Saskatchewan, at least in the beginning of the year, looked unbeatable and then hit a couple of speed bumps, I don't think that's a reflection of how the season ended. I mean, as much as you want to say that you finished tied with Saskatchewan, you know, you didn't make it to the Grey Cup. So BC's even closer to being fourth than Saskatchewan, you know, as far as that's
right, but nobody's going to put them in that position.
No, I'm not saying anybody's putting
them in
that
position.
Nobody
in this group right now would put them in that position.
What, in fourth?
Nope, I wouldn't. No way. not a chance.
Are we talking about Saskatchewan or are we talking about BC?
No, we're talking about BC.
Yeah, I thought
I'm
so.
I'm talking
okay.
about both of them.
Yeah, I know
I
what you're talking about.
Both of them
will
be in the top three.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is this, is that really Edmonton's maybe made a lot of improvements. Winnipeg's, you know, I mean, we're hearing from different corners that both these teams could be making the playoffs. And all mm-hmm. I said was one of the teams that did make the playoffs may not, and I felt that Calgary was the one that was more susceptible to not making the playoffs than either BC or Saskatchewan.
And my point being is I believe that the quarterback position at Calgary is a lot more stable than what people believe. They didn't lose a lot of players. I don't think that they are going to take the hit this season than what you people are suggesting that they are. And I believe that if they're the Indians that took a bigger hit on player personnel, it would have been the Riders.
I get that. I get that.
So somebody's going to take a step backwards.
Yeah. I'm just saying I think it's Calgary because Calgary, it's not what they lost. It's not what they gained. It's that a team that gets that close and has that kind of emotional disappointment 2 years in a row, I just don't see them overcoming that. That's the biggest challenge I think Calgary has against them right now.
That's why they brought in a quarterback.
Yeah, but then again, you know, we've had the conversation here, proven quarterback, unproven quarterback, backup quarterback, you know, and McPherson fits all those categories. I'm not saying he will.
Who would you rather have, McPherson or Troy Smith?
Well, you know, I'm going to have to say McPherson because he has more experience in pro football.
Exactly. So he's more proven quarterback.
Yeah, I get that. But I just
think Calgary is going to be a lot better than what you guys are saying that they are.
No, it's just me. No one else has said anything about Calgary. Just I. Okay.
Well,
so
you know what Calgary's problem could be, guys, is they have what's his name, the guy that signed in the NFL recently from Calgary. He was on that top 10 list, the first one that the CFL.ca put out. I think it's like a three-letter last name, like Cox or something like that. These guys, Calgary has two guys that could possibly return, and Saskatchewan is actually, like I know this for sure, they're saving a bit of money on the cap to re-sign Darien to a multi-year deal, and they're also saving a little bit in case Weston comes back or Sheets comes back. I don't think both, but I think they're thinking one or of the two could come back, and they want to save enough cap space for that time. So what I was going to say about Calgary, though, is they definitely have some issues there with cap space having to save, and you know, I think three quarterbacks, it really kind of like three quarterbacks that are going to be making that kind of money. I don't know. I don't know how the math is going to add up in Calgary as far as getting guys in there that they need to make the difference. Anyways, that guy's name was Cordero Law. They're thinking he may be back in September. And, you know, they lost Dmitry Zumpas. That's the other huge factor for me is they had a 5-year veteran one of the best in the league retire, and people are underestimating this. Like, this is a huge factor for Calgary.
Did he retire? I thought he resigned.
No, he retired.
he just started following me on Twitter, and I'm saying,
yeah.
And I'm saying to myself, wait a second, why isn't he on? But he's not on their list.
No,
so
Kelly's
right. He retired, or
he's
or
retired January 29th, 2014. Announced
his retirement.
Man, it's a huge factor, and nobody's been talking about it. Like,
well, I'll tell you right now, it wasn't on. I don't think it was on CFL.ca. That's for sure, and I follow that fairly religiously.
I'm going through it right now.
And it shocked the crap out of me. I mean, you know, he started following me, and he's retired, and now you're telling me he's retired. So I'll have to call him, I'll have to message him and ask him to come on the show and talk to us about his career. It's unbelievable. But, yeah, I had a hard time finding him, you know, on a roster anywhere. And I'm going, what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
This guy's an All-Canadian. In 2010, he was their number one Canadian in Calgary. He won the Canadian player. You know, was it 2010?
Yep.
I think it was
2010. Yeah, and he won Offensive Lineman of the Year 1 year, too, didn't he?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, was it a secret that he retired, you know?
No, it quietly happened.
It sure did.
Last week of January, and people just didn't notice, and I was talking to my dad about it, and I said, how huge is that? And he's like, well, that's massive. Like, look for Cornish to have 200-300 yards less. He's a run blocking specialist, Zubas.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's too bad
that
he retired.
So that was on the 29th of January, you said, Kelly?
Yep.
Because it's not in the
Tracker. Look at the list of Calgary guys.
I'm looking for that. I'm looking for that list, and I can't find it.
On the free agent tracker under the player tab.
Oh, there it is. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Geez, I wish I'd known that weeks ago.
Yeah, no, and that's one of the main reasons why
he wasn't on there.
I looked on that list.
He wasn't on that list.
Well, he is
now.
Yeah,
he says retired.
I just looked. Yeah. That's a huge factor, and that's why Manasse and I were saying, like,
how do you spell his last name? How do you spell his last name?
T-S-O-U-M-P-A-S.
Right. He's not. There's Tripp and then Tureen.
No, it's on the free agent tracker list, Frank.
Under players. Okay.
Are you on CFL.ca?
Yep.
Free agents tracker.
Now I got you. Now
I got you. Category.
Yep. So that's just massive, and who they, you know, they do have decent standing in the draft, but not great standing. I mean, there's going to be a couple of linemen drafted before them, according to CFL.ca and their top 10 list of draft eligible players. So, I think they're out of luck in the first round for an old lineman. I mean,
yeah, you know. So basically, you're pointing out that Calgary's going to have a tough time replacing him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, hey guys, I mean seriously, has there been a season in a long time where both East and West is up for grabs? Kinda.
Yeah, not in a while. I mean, there's been a favorite, a sheer favorite kind of year in, year out.
Well, it's not just the favorite. There's also the team that everybody, wrong or right, you were always able to point at who was the top team in a division and the worst team. But it's totally gray now. It really is gray. Much grayer than it's been in a long time. You don't agree, Chris?
Yeah.
Christopher?
Well, I think I have a pretty good stability of where the teams are going to be this year. I don't see any gray areas.
Well, I didn't mean okay. All right. In other words, let's try it a different way. In other words, when you look at the East and the West, both, you have less doubt today than you had last year.
I would say yes. There's more parity this year.
Yeah, exactly. So he's got to have a lot more doubt this year on who isn't going to make the playoffs than last year, or who's going to finish first.
Yeah, and it's all based
the
on
combination
the fact that
of
Ottawa
the
came into the league.
But nobody would have wagered that Edmonton and Winnipeg would do so pathetic last year as what they did. We honestly believe that they had made enough difference, enough changes that they would have improved their team. They had both of them had pathetic seasons last year. Nobody would have said that. Okay? Everybody would have thought that they would have been fighting for a playoff position.
I thought I was the only person to believe that Edmonton had a chance last year. I sure felt like it.
Oh, no, we all did. I mean, I have ultimate faith in Mike Riley. I think he is the savior in that town. He is going to do it. And if Chris Jones can get him an O-line, it's going to be a whole different ballgame coming out of that city, way more than Manasseh's Winnipeg because they don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, Edmonton has some decent depth overall, especially at the Canadian spots. And, I mean, we all know that's a big factor. Team depth is huge.
And they were young. They were younger last year.
That's
a team that's a year older now with a lot of talent a year older.
Yeah, for sure.
Winnipeg lost a lot of their talent. They lost a lot of their Canadians.
You know, my problem with Edmonton constantly is just that they fired the wrong guy. I mean, I think the wrong guy is still at the top there, and well, not at the absolute top, but in the GM spot. And I think that's gonna cause headaches for Edmonton. I mean, you can't go anywhere if the top guy isn't doing what he's supposed to do, and he hasn't proven that he can do anything. So,
I tend to believe that Chris Jones will end up being the GM. I tend to believe that Chris Jones will be the GM.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
He was the assistant GM in Toronto.
That'll take away from his coaching duty.
Yeah, but I think he'll step away from that.
Oh, you think? And who will lead the team on the field?
Well, there's nothing wrong with him having the same kind of credentials and or position that Kent Austin has, and it wouldn't have taken him much to convince Edmonton. Huh?
Or Huffnagel.
You know, I mean, it's not an unusual thing. Yeah, see, keep going. You know, Barker.
Yeah, it's not unusual.
It's not unusual
for that to happen. I just don't think Chris Jones has the experience in a GM position, nor does he have the connections down south of the border. Or, you know, he's just not there yet. Herbie is in a far worse position. I'm totally agreeing with Kelly, as well as most people from Edmonton, that they fired the wrong person.
Well, we all know that they fired the wrong person. If you followed this show, you knew that. You would know that for sure. You know, that to me, he proved his lack of worth as a GM and made a mistake, which is crippling, last year when he called out the offensive line and basically suggested that players be sat without talking to the coach privately. I mean, talk about a coach saying something to a player, in public and not trying to handle it privately. That's suicide in the dressing room. And a GM doing it?
It's also the GM looks like an idiot because he's the guy who put those players in the locker room to start with.
And the coach.
He's throwing himself under the bus.
Well, that's why I'm saying
the coach has to deal with the team that he gets. It's one thing to call out the O-line because what else can he do, right? But when the GM calls out the O-line, he's the one that put him in the dressing room.
There you go. We're going to have to leave it there. We're going to have to leave it there, Chris. Steve, thank you. Steve Richardson, Christopher Jones, Kelly Bale, John Granger was here. Scott Nichols, thank you for your contribution. Bruce John Inch, of course, it goes without saying. Danny Salonen, who jetted in and then jetted out. And I think I said, Steve Myers, thanks for your input as a Red Blacks fan. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the Olympics. I know I've been really proud, and it's been a great Olympics, and I think we're going to have a great CFL year when it comes right round to it. So thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you again next time, or we'll hear you next time on Candid Frank Live. Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, we will. Thank you.
Cheers.
Good night, guys.
Take care, guys. It's great to be on the show.
Late.